and thank you for joining us on this series of podcasts about men in early years childcare. I'm Cathy Brodie of CathyBrodie.com. There's still very few men in childcare, so I was interested to investigate why this is and also how we can improve this situation. Today I'm joined by Andy Mitchell, who is a newly qualified early years teacher. Welcome to the podcast, Andy.
Thank you. Good morning, Cathy.
Good morning. Now, Andy, you've had an incredibly unusual route into the early years sector. Can you give us some background into how being a bone marrow donor has led you into your current career path, please?
Yeah, it certainly starts out as a strange story, but it was probably something I was always wanting to do, but never believed that I had the opportunities or the ability to do, I guess. Found myself, I suppose, trapped in the, I'd become a wage slave because I got myself a job that I ended up staying in for 12 years, which helped, no doubt, to pay the mortgage. I got married, we had two children, my wife went off and trained as a nurse. So for me, I was committed to securing my family, I suppose, looking after us all. So I never thought that I could ever return to education to get myself out of what I was doing and into something that I'd always wanted to do. Yeah. But back in 2006, I think it was, I joined the Anthony Nolan Bone Marrow Register.
Oh, yeah.
After seeing a local appeal for two children who happened to share the same names as my children, and they both needed bone marrow transplants. So my wife and I joined the register, and it turned out we were not a match for either of those. But in 2008, I was found to be a perfect match for somebody in need of a life-saving bone marrow transplant. So in 2008, I underwent the transplant process, which turned out was incredibly easy after me thinking it might be something really difficult.
Yeah.
It turned out to be incredibly easy. And I guess I had a bit of a life-changing experience because I then got involved with Anthony Nolan and an education campaign which involved me going back into schools and speaking to children and young people about the importance of blood, organ and bone marrow donation. Mm. Now, that was primarily secondary schools. But at one point I went back to my old school, my old secondary school, and spoke to the head teacher, who it turned out was my old geography teacher. Now, bearing in mind I'd been gone from that school approaching more 20 years maybe.
Wow.
And he was able to tell me things about myself that I didn't even recall.
Yeah.
So it was quite a sort of an enlightenment to see the importance that someone like him placed on remembering his pupils and the people that he'd come into contact with over the years. And it just set my mind racing, thinking I can't live my life now.
Yeah.
Committed to just earning a wage. I need to do something that I'm going to be happy doing, something that I enjoy and something that I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I set about getting in touch with universities and off I went. Eventually, I left my job in late 2010, went to university, and I've recently qualified, as you say, this summer. So a bit of a strange route, I think, but I got there eventually.
Yes, it was almost like it called out to you, like all the stars aligned, didn't they?
It certainly did, and thankfully the bone marrow transplant was a complete success, and the recipient and I are friends now, and he's now, he's at least 6 years post-transplant, so, and in that time my life's changed completely, and his has been extended by 6 years.
That's amazing, isn't it? Would that be in the normal circumstance that you would meet the person to whom you've donated?
It would only be if they get the right to decide that. As the patient, obviously, they're the one who are ill. As the donor, I get the ability to say yes or no. I would like to know how the transplant has gone, because you can imagine in some circumstances, people may be donating to a child, for example, and they may find that it's not something they want to know whether it's been a success or not. But for me, I wanted to know. And thankfully, my recipient, who happens to be called Paul, he also wanted to know where his donation had come from. So a period of 2 years has to pass that we're kept anonymous. And then after 2 years, we are allowed to exchange details, which we've then done. And we went on to meet and everything. I've met his family and things, which is quite quite emotional, I suppose, without it sounding too corny.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just amazing, as you say, and that's taken you off into whole new areas as well, hasn't it?
So, well, twice, when we met, he talked about his life being saved, and I again, not trying to make it over dramatic, and I said, well, I can say the same. I said, because mine has changed beyond recognition, and that goes for me, my wife, and the children. It's been a life-changing career change for me, and obviously the impact on them as well. It's been very important for them.
Yeah, of course, yeah. How fascinating. Yes, I think that's going to be one of the most unusual stories that we hear somehow. Yeah.
Probably.
Okay, so you started off on your degree course supporting children's learning and development. Why did you choose that particular course? What appealed to you about that?
I had limitations coming back to education and not having UCAS credits and things. I had limitations in the routes that I could take that would give me a path into education. But I didn't just want to do any degree and then go on to do a PGCE. I wanted to get a grounding in education, basically. So that particular degree was very much a theory based. It gave me a lot of background into child development, child psychology, learning theory, multidisciplinary work. And there was lots of different facets to it that I thought would give me a good grounding before I then went on to do the PGCE of my choice, because I always knew that was going to have to be the path that I had to take. So I knew it was going to take 4 years rather than three. And it left me with lots of options by the end. It wasn't something that, if I found, because it did involve school-based placements right throughout the degree, but it just didn't carry QTS. So it gave me the opportunity to find out for myself if it really was the route that I wanted to go down, but it left me with other options. I could have maybe drifted off in towards social work or other child and family related employment opportunities. So it was something that I just wanted to explore.
Yeah.
And as it was, it provided me with the ideal grounding, I believe, to go on and do my PGCE. And now, obviously, I'm working as a teacher at the moment.
So you did, during your PGCE, let's move on to that you actually went to Norway to visit outdoor play. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What was that like?
Absolutely. It was phenomenal. It was something during the degree course and during the PGCE, we hear a lot about the importance of learning outside the classroom. And as much as I was learning about it, I don't believe that we really see it very often in mainstream. Obviously, there will be exceptions to that. But I didn't believe that we've seen a lot of it. And I was fooling myself by thinking that taking the children outside onto the yard and doing a small maths activity on the hopscotch area in the playground, that's me taking the children and they're learning outside the classroom. Now, I know physically they were learning outside the classroom, but I soon come to realise that it's something totally different. It has to be a philosophy of being outside and adapting your whole teaching and the whole ethos of the way you do things for it to really constitute learning outdoors. So I contacted, as part of my PGCE, we have a requirement to do 10 days placement in something different, somewhere not mainstream. It could have involved simply going to a library and being involved in a literacy project. It could have involved a special school, for example, or something that you'd not done before. So I set about using social media to see if I could arrange a trip to Scandinavia. So I ended up going to Norway, as you say. I spent 7 days in Norway at an outdoor kindergarten, which for children aging from 18 months up to six, and to see how their children get so much independence and so much physical and, I suppose, social and emotional development from the way that they spend their day.
Yeah.
I came back, and the school I was in at the time on placement said, oh, you must have come back with lots of ideas for us. And I said, not unless we can change a whole cultural philosophy, a whole cultural ethos, policy from right down from top to bottom, then not an awful lot of what I've seen can come back home with us.
Yeah.
Because it really is a totally different approach to the way they teach young children, because they don't. There's no formal teaching before the age of six, for example. So it's very much about letting the children develop into the young people that they're going to become before they then go off to a different school, where still they're committed to at least one full day of outdoor education.
Oh, really?
Really?
But, yeah, even once they go into what will be our year one, I guess, but where they will then begin to learn phonics and learn to read and to write. I'm not saying that none of that goes on in the outdoor kindergartens, because obviously they're still exposed to literacy and things like that, and they still have those experiences, but it's just done totally, totally different. And it was all outside. We were out in the snow for basically all day, having lots of different opportunities for the children to be children, which was super to see.
Yeah. How did they feel when you came back and said, well, actually, we'd have to change our whole ethos in order to bring any of this back to you? Was there a feeling of, well, we can't do that?
I suppose there was, to an extent, because we are restricted by legislation. But the school I was in at that particular time, they were very keen to promote the forest school movement within the boundaries that they possibly could, which, again, are really limited. In an inner city school in Liverpool, the forest school opportunities are obviously limited to the grounds that the school had, really, I guess, because to decide to just take the children out because the weather happens to be appropriate or... It's not that straightforward in quite a large school. It's not as straightforward as we would like it to be, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. No, I would agree. I mean, I like the forest school ethos and the ideas, but as you say, it's not as simple as, oh, well, we'll just go to the local forest then, shall we? You can't. That's exactly. Not always possible, is it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, how interesting. Can I just bring us on to the idea that when you started your course, both your degree and your PGCE, you were both a mature learner and a male in a female-dominated kind of area. Uh-huh. How did you find that combination?
I'll be honest, I didn't find it. The fact that I'm a male, I know I've mentioned to you in our emails and things before this, the fact that I'm a male didn't make any difference. To me, I am quite blasé about that fact because I've never been anything else. Yeah. So it kind of didn't resonate with me that I was doing something predominantly female. It wasn't something that I had any thoughts on, to be fair. So when I went to university, obviously I wasn't even the oldest, which surprised me. I thought I would be. I was the oldest male, I think. But I wasn't the oldest person doing the course.
Yeah.
And that was a funny one because, if anything, I suppose the first year of university experience for a lot of people involves lots of late nights, lots of partying, lots of extracurricular activities, whereas for a mature student, it involves working hard because you've left the job, you've got a wife and two children and a mortgage. So it was a different experience for me than it was for many of the people I was working with. But it stood me in good stead because it meant that I worked really hard, I think, because I needed it so much or so badly. Not more than them. I can't possibly say I needed it more than them. But it meant so much more to me at that particular time that I worked extremely hard. And I think in the end, my results benefited from it. So, but being a male, I'll be honest, I didn't really notice any particular difference.
You didn't have that feeling that when you walked into the room, it was like, oh, what's he doing here? He's in the wrong course.
There was, I think there was four of us.
Oh, was there?
In about, yeah, but there's a cohort of about 90. So
right.
I guess we did, to an extent, we would gravitate towards each other and talk about things, but it was never anything that I made a particular issue of. And it wasn't something, the university have since come back to me only recently, funny enough, and asked if there was anything they can do differently. They were just, I suppose, doing an audit on their practice. And they came back and asked, particularly on the PGCE, was there anything, as a male learner, was there anything different that I think they could or should have done?
Yeah.
And I'm not in the process of making myself seem any different. I just felt like I was another student going about my business. Yes, you have, I don't want to say reservations, I'm aware of the fact that I'm a male working in early years, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's more about how, I think that's other people's concerns, not mine, if that makes sense. I don't want that to sound like I'm writing off. But yeah, it's that. I think other people think about it more than I do.
Yes, I think that's probably true, actually. Certainly when I've been in settings and you know, been sitting, singing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, and suddenly this deep voice comes in. It's us that jump, it's not the bloke. It's like, well, yeah. As I say, this is what I've always been. It's you that's got the reaction. Yeah, no, I can see exactly where you're coming from on that. Yeah. So you're now in a reception class. You're working for the moment. A reception. Have you been able to bring all of that, all the learning that you've had off your degree course, off your PGC, have you been able to consolidate all that into your everyday teaching now?
Oh, I think I'm trying to. It's a bit of a whirlwind, I must admit. But I've gone in. It's a supply post that I'm doing at the moment. I'm there at least another couple of weeks. And it's challenging to, you go in and then you're fitting into somebody else's system, somebody else's way of working. But it's definitely something that I'm constantly referring back to what I've learned over the last couple of years to try to improve what I'm doing daily. The outdoor learning aspect is limited, again, because of the environment. Yeah. It's limited to what I can possibly bring. Hopefully the children are getting as much from it as possible. But yes, it's different being, it's not my own class, and I've not been there from the beginning. Yeah. So it is challenging, and it's interesting, if anything, to try and see how I can incorporate the things I've learned into somebody else's classroom, somebody else's environment. So it's challenging, but it's very, very interesting.
Yeah. I think you'll probably find that experience will stand you in good stead as well when you do get your own class. You'll think, well, if this was my class, this is how I would do it. It'll consolidate some of those ideas for you, possibly.
Absolutely. Lots of people I've spoken to about supply, they've all said the same. Because I didn't plan to go down the route of supply. It was just that I didn't apply for jobs, I guess, at the right time. I was so busy finishing the PGC and trying to get that. Finished successfully that all the jobs seemed to be advertised at that point and completely went over my head, to be fair. I applied for a couple of posts, which I didn't get, which that's fine. But supply has proven to be very, very interesting. I've enjoyed every day. So, and that was the reason that I left my job in the first place, was to try and find something that I enjoyed, something that offered something different every day. I think working with children, that's definitely the case.
Do you think that's the most enjoyable? What would you say was the most enjoyable thing about working with children?
I think it's that. I think it's that someone will do something every day, somebody different in the main, will do something different every day to surprise you, to amaze you, to make you laugh, to make you sad, I suppose, as well, at the same time. There will be something happen. No 2 days are ever going to be the same.
Yeah.
I think it's that which is important, and I think it's that which drew me to early years. It's the level of change, because when I take us back to when I first had the idea back in 2010, I went and volunteered at my daughter was in reception at the time, and I went and volunteered at her school just to see, and it was phenomenal for me to see where children enter as they leave nursery, go into reception, and the people they are with by the time they leave year two, to go from the infant school up to the junior school. It was that phenomenal level of change that you see in them that really, that was the bit that made me think, yeah, this is where I want to work. This is where I need to be. I can work higher up the school, but I would choose, given the choice, I would certainly choose to work in early years, certainly in foundation or in key stage one.
Well, as you say, the PGC does give you that flexibility, doesn't it? So that is a good thing, isn't it? Have you encountered any specific difficulties at school? Because presumably there's going to be other male teachers at school. So have you encountered anything different at school rather than in a setting at all?
Not really. There are one or two. Let me think where I am now. There are only, I think I've come across three other male staff.
Yeah.
Even in previous placements, it would always be one or two, and the caretaker generally.
Yeah.
the people that you find you have things in common with. But now the female staff I've worked with have all been absolutely superb, and I can't say that there aren't times when there are things that they would normally say, there are things that they would like to say, just in conversation, maybe in the staff room or after school. There are conversations that they would have, and they suddenly realise there's a male in the room, and they will refrain from what they would like to say. And sometimes, I guess, that makes you feel, I suppose as if you're in the way, but in a nice way. They don't do anything, don't go out the way to make me feel anything but welcome. So I've no great concern. I suppose that goes against the idea of finding out about men in early years, but My experiences have all been very, very positive, and I hope that will continue, because I'd like to see more males do it.
Yes.
I'd like to see more males go into education full stop. It doesn't have to be early years, but I don't think there are any negatives that I can tell you, because I suppose there's young children, I will refrain from certain things, certain duties that the female staff will just do. There will be a child, for example, a child hurts themselves, a young girl, she may be four, she'll fall and hurt her knee, but she's wearing tights.
Right.
So
I
will naturally ask one of the other staff if they can take a look at her knee rather than me do it. Now, they don't think twice about it, because obviously I do. So there are situations that I distance myself from, whether that's right or wrong, I don't actually know what the right or the wrong is in that circumstance, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, I mean, putting the children's interest first has always got to be right, hasn't it?
Exactly.
If that's what you feel, then that's, you know, you really can't argue against that. Absolutely.
But I suppose I had an opposite, where a little boy had had an accident and he said to me, please don't tell anybody.
Oh.
He didn't want to know that. He didn't want other people to know what had happened.
Yeah.
So a quick change. One member of staff went and carried it, not me.
Yeah.
Somebody else went and dealt with it. And I felt as if I'd let him down a little, because I did tell somebody. I told another member of staff, a female member of staff, she went and dealt with it. And I felt a little as though I'd let him down, because he'd come to me and said, please don't tell. But I took that as reading to be, don't tell the other children,
yes,
which obviously I was never going to do. But I didn't deal with it myself. I opted to get somebody else to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I still don't know, as I say, I don't know whether I've done the right thing or the wrong thing. Now, he's not come back and complained to me, but I guess he's not going to do that. Age four, so.
Oh, you'd be surprised. So you're pretty vocal about what they do.
Yeah, I suppose he could let me know.
Oh, yes. What sort of things do you think would have helped you, either during your studies or now as a teacher? What sort of things would help you, support you as a man, do you think?
Well, that's difficult because of what I've said. I suppose I don't look for any different support. I think we should all be treated the same. I suppose it goes back to other people's perceptions. I think parents perhaps don't expect to see a male in early years. And I suppose it's education for everybody rather than making different or exceptions of male students. I don't think we should be singled out in any way, because and I know it's meant as a positive thing, but I don't like the idea that we will be treated differently, because I don't see myself differently. So it's a difficult one to answer, to be fair.
I noticed that you said before that you sort of, the men on the childcare course tended to gravitate together, and that's certainly been my experience as well. Do you think things like networks or support groups, where it is all blokes together, so you can have a bit of a like, oh, you know, never guess what happened to me kind of thing. Do you think that would help, that sort of thing?
Don't think it's something that I would do personally.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because for all the reasons I've said, I've tried. In fact, I've not even tried. It's not been a deliberate. It's not been a deliberate policy of mine to not feel different. It's just that's the way it is. I've worked with men. I've worked with women, and I've worked across male and female environments, I guess. And certainly now, obviously, I'm in a female-orientated environment, but I don't try, and I've not really felt, aside from, as I say, the odd conversation people will be having and they'll realise I'm in the room.
Yeah.
I've tried not to make it any issue, and I don't believe we need anything separate as a male. If there are circumstances where you feel you need to talk to somebody, those people are there. They still exist. I don't think something, some sort of secret society needs to be. I'm not trying to trivialise it. I don't think we need anything separate from anybody else. We can speak to each other privately if we have concerns about anything.
Yeah.
That applies both male and female. They we're all entitled to speak to each other, and take advice and share experiences how we see fit. But I don't think there should be a male only club where we're allowed to share ideas or experiences or anything. I personally wouldn't seek out such a network, to be fair.
So really, it is about that support for everybody and making sure that everybody has access to good practice, to good pedagogy, that they understand the ethos of their setting or their school. And that doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman, that you should have that support there for everybody.
You summarised it far better than I could. That's absolutely what I'm trying to say. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So if there are any men out there listening at the moment who do want to get into early years or to get into childcare, what would your advice be to them?
I would certainly recommend that they go and find out if it's for you. Do what I've done, go and volunteer, go and get a feel for early years and see if it's somewhere. I was never destined for secondary school education, despite it being an experience back in my old secondary school that led me to, that really did light the spark again for me. Although it was that, I was never destined to work somewhere like that. I've always wanted or always enjoyed being around young children, whether it be my own or members of the family and people like that. I'd always have time for them. And I think that's the key. If you've got the time to want to listen and want to help young children, then go and see if it's for you. Go and experience it. Go and enjoy it. And you'll know. I think they will know. I think if somebody has that inclination and they enjoy that type of environment, which is hectic, it's hard work. There's no getting away from the level of work and commitment that people have to put in. But it's most certainly rewarding when you see, or when a child comes in the following day and tells you that they've gone home and they've sought out the letter or the sound that you were teaching the day before, or they've gone looking for the spiders and the spiders' webs that you've talked about in school that day. Things like that, when they've come back into school the following day and told me, oh, miss, because I get called miss by the children. And that is one, I suppose that's the most obvious. I should have thought of that before. That's the most obvious thing about being a male in early years. Everybody calls you miss. Absolutely everybody. Aside from the staff, obviously, they've now got used to it. But the children have not yet bothered to correct, because it's so many of them that it would be nigh on impossible.
It's funny, actually, that you should say that, because I was watching an American programme, and the it was like a cop programme. The woman was asked everyone to call her sir, and she was a woman, which threw me totally.
Well, there you go, yeah. That was, it would confuse me if one of them did. They call me Mr. Mitchell, they get that.
Yeah,
but then it's just miss all day, so it's... But I can live with that. That's not the first time it's happened right throughout. I suppose that's happened right throughout my training, so I'm used to it now.
You kind of got into that, yeah. Oh, that's been absolutely fascinating. I can say that is an absolutely unique story into how somebody's got into early years.
I guess so.
And it's lovely to see that you've engaged so well with the school, because it'd be awful to go through that and go, actually, you know what? So it's been really, really nice, and it's fantastic to hear that you're enjoying your time at school as well. That's absolutely excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed for sharing those experiences with us.
No problem at all. Thanks for the opportunity.
And very best of luck for the future. I hope you find a full-time job very soon. I'm sure you will, Andy.
Fingers crossed. I hope so, Cathy. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Do join me again for the next podcast about men in childcare.